All right, ladies and gentlemen, and strength coaches everywhere, welcome back to the Conjugate Chats. Before we start getting into the episode with our fantastic guests, we have a couple ad reads to get through. The first one is the Working Dog Coffee. So there's so many people I know mindlessly consume coffee through disturbing products on the market. The solution we have is offering an organic coffee product that doesn't have any of the nasty side effects as a poorly regulated energy drink. The only products you'll see on the label are 100%, yes, 100% organic coffee with organic flavoring. We have two flavors, the mild and the burner, are a great mix of a high caffeine product and a classic Colombian favorite blend for the coffee lovers. You can go to the website and use the code CHATS for 15% off, and every bag you buy will help support Working Dog charities around the country. Now, let's get into our other sponsor, which is Team Builder. Team Builder is the software for performance coaches around the world. Their powerhouse platform provides coaches with an elevated experience when it comes to program development, data tracking, and staying connected with athletes and clients. Team Builder is full of tools that coaches need, like multiple max training methods, 16-plus reports, evaluation testing, and goal setting, to name a few. Coaches also have access to consults with Team Builder's in-house sports scientists to help manage and analyze data. Head to teambuilder.com and sign up with the promo code CONJUGATE to receive a 30-day free trial as well as a 52-week football workout program. And with that in mind, let's jump into the episode.
Aren't like 14 of the 18 events speed-based, where like the fastest guy wins? Throwers are fast. The great vaulters are fast. The great long jumpers, triple jumpers, high jumpers are fast.
And welcome back to another episode of the Conjugate Chats. I have on a legendary coach. He is known in the track and field world and now the sport performance world for his feed the cats mentality. It's Coach Tony Holler. Coach, welcome to the Conjugate Chats, man. It's awesome to have you on.
Well, thanks, JM. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start from like the genesis of your career. Right in the very beginning, why track and field, why go into coaching, and then we can kind of stem from there.
The genesis was the day I was born, because my dad was a career coach at the age of 22. He went on to coach 47 years, 44 of them as a head basketball coach, only three as an assistant. He moved around. I think he was at eight different schools, high school and college, and I was his firstborn. And he's one of those kids where nobody had ever gone to high school, let alone college, in his family. But yet a basketball coach, a great basketball coach, saved him as a human being, convinced him to go to college when only one out of every 14 kids were going to college. And he met my mom, who was a high school valedictorian, and I was born like a year later. And so I always say I was born a coach's kid. I went to college pre-med because I thought that's what smart people were supposed to do. And I wised up within a year and said, Dad, I'm a coach like you, because I've never seen anybody as excited about the next day, the next practice, the next game, the next season as you are. You're just an excited guy all the time. And that's the way I want to live. So that's when I changed. And so I became a basketball coach. That's because my dad was, but I coached three sports, football, basketball, track. And at the age of 23, I became the youngest head basketball coach in the state of Illinois at Harrisburg High School, down by Carbondale, or up at Carbondale if you're in Tennessee. And I had reasonable success. Actually, my first 5 years, I got slaughtered. I think we were 28 and 96 in my first 5 years. But then we had three good years and I got fired, and the same board that fired me in March hired me in February, begged me in February to take the head track job. So here I was, a family of four, two teachers, in debt, and I'd lost the love of my life, basketball. And so I had to reinvent myself as a track coach. After about 10 years of coaching track the way I was coached, I blew it all up and started training athletes to be fast. And I eventually called it Feed the Cats. And 25 years later, here I am.
Awesome, coach. Well, let's kind of peel back a little bit. Why did you call it Feed the Cats? Like, I understand that maybe some people understand your reasonings and seen your explanations and videos, but to those that don't know, why do you call it Feed the Cats?
You know, things happen, you know, like several things happened around the same time, around 1999, which was truly 25 years ago. And it's interesting, I'm 65 now. So I was 40 years old, and I was still, if I look back at my 40-year-old self, I'm cringing. I'm embarrassed. I'm like, I was so awful. And I'd had success. I'd had, you know, I'd already won a state championship in track. I had four great seasons in basketball. So I was a coach that probably could have defended everything I did, but instead I blew it all up. And one of the reasons why I blew it up, I went to a clinic. And, you know, the only way our life changes is if we read books, we attend clinics, we talk to people that are unique and different. Kind of like you do in your podcast. And I talked to a guy, actually, he was a presenter, a guy named Paul Souza, who was a Division III coach in Massachusetts. I'd never heard of him before, but he was a great, great speaker. And from what I understand now, he's also a great coach. And he talked about getting on a track bus, and you got the big throwers, and they're not like the distance runners. They're like a different species of animal or something. The distance runners are like, you know, faithful family dogs. You know, you tell them to run a lap and they'll say how many. And then the cats get on the bus. The cats are the sprinters. They're the quote unquote lazy ones. I thought to myself, like, those cats are really the guys that win track meets for you. Like, aren't like 14 of the 18 events speed based, where like the fastest guy wins? Like, even we're talking before we started recording, the throwers are fast. The great vaulters are fast. The great long jumpers, triple jumpers, high jumpers are fast. And so I was like, you know, what if I started doing things different? And then the same guy told me this. He said, we had four guys run under 48 in the 40, no, four under 48 in the 400 last year. At a Division III school, no scholarships. And he said, none of them ever ran more than 200 meters in practice. And me being an old school guy that was trained Clyde Hart, well, I mean, you know, like 10 200s one day, 10 300s, ladders the next. We just ran until we hated it. And I thought to myself, what if I would have loved track? What if I would have loved training? What if the furthest I would ever have to run to 200 meters and never more than three in a practice? And somehow the thing about the cats and the different way of training and joyful training, somewhere in my head came the word feed them, feed the cats, nourish the cats. And it's a different way, because I think all through my coaching career, I believe the coaches push kids, and the greatest coaches were the greatest pushers of kids. Demanding, intolerant of mistakes, getting on them, you know, like, we're not going to allow any standing around, all this kind of stuff. And here I'm going to change everything and build a program on joy and rest and recovery and really high performance-like outputs in practice in small doses. And it really worked well.
I would say it works really well, coach. You know, you started basically a whole movement of, you know, not even just track now. It's becoming football. It's becoming in other sports, starting to bleed out into other sports to where, you know, we're training athletic qualities like speed, which is an output, you know, a power output. You know, we were talking before we were recording, a 10-yard fly with a 5 build-in. Even the 100-meter dash is a power output. It is speed and power all in the same exercise. And you can disagree with me if you want to, but sprinting is probably the most sport specific thing that any athlete can do. It, like any. I just think about it now because like you started this whole mentality of fatigue is the enemy, and how that's been now adopted into the high school realm and to the collegiate realm. And man, it's awesome that mentality that you've adopted and brought to the sport performance, the strength conditioning world.
Yeah, the world, I got on Twitter, I think like 12 years ago, and started publishing my writings and stuff, and we're living in a different world now, than the world that when I grew up as a young coach. And I've gotten so much feedback. So many people now feed the cats, and people call it a cult because people are so passionate about it. And the reason for that is because not only are athletes reborn, but reborn athletes are reflected by coaches. As a coach, if your athletes are excited about training, if practice is the best part of their day, it rubs off on you. And so people get really passionate about this, like people that were ready to resign and quit coaching because of it sucks and all that stuff. They've now like had a rebirth, and it's and so when they tell me all about it and they send me testimonials and stuff, they've created a monster, obviously, where now I'm pretty damn confident when I say this is a great way to do things. And you're right. I wanted to correct you on one thing. You said that sprinting was the most sport specific thing. I think it's the most athlete specific. It's just a technicality. Just, because of this. When I think of specific, I think of like what is required to be good at that sport. Like a volleyball player, they don't sprint. So it's not sport specific. But they should still sprint because the faster you can sprint, the higher you can jump, the farther you can jump. And I also think it potentiates the weight room where your lifting will be better if your CNS is all fired up. And so I say that speed is the tide that lifts all boats. And it's so strange that I bet you, if you look at all athletes, all sports, maybe 80% never sprint at full speed in training. It's absolutely mind-blowing. Now, it feels like everybody is now, because everybody that talks to me, they sprint. They free lap, they change it to miles per hour, they buy the bands and all that kind of stuff. So it seems like it's everywhere. But if I ask a football coach, does your offensive line sprint? They go, oh yeah, we do sprints. I go, like what? They go, oh, well, we run, sprints at the end of practice. I go, that's not sprinting. And they go, well, we'll do some tens. I say, yeah, but they're not getting the max velocity. And I try to tell them, why do you think, okay, there's like 30 guys, they're 6'5", 315 that go to the NFL combine. Who goes in the first round? The fastest guys in the 40s. And people may not like that, but there's a reason for it. They're better athletes. They'll have longer careers. They won't be as tired in the fourth quarter. The better athlete you are, the better everything is. And if I ask anybody in America who uses the word athletic, I say, what words come to mind when you say athletic? The first word out of their mouth is fast. But yet 80% of the world doesn't sprint.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there thinking about it, like even as adults, even as coaches, like some of us don't sprint after we get done like playing football, playing our sportswear, we don't sprint. I kind of made that point at a talk I did a couple of weeks back. It's like, when was the last time you sprinted? And I think it to my own training, like, I barely even sprint anymore just because like there's not a coach telling me to do it anymore. There's not a coach, harping me. It's like, this is good for you and stuff like that. But now, understand it from like a sport performance kind of view. Like, why would you not sprint? Why would you not do the one thing that makes an athlete more athletic?
And as you age, I would think the fountain of youth is athleticism. And what's the first word out of your mouth? Fast. And what do people never do? As you said, I mean, I think we've been brainwashed. I have run 669 consecutive days. And I'm talking about not sprinting, but running. I was infected. I was brainwashed back in the 70s. The greatest athletes in the world were boxers. And they did road work, which is jogging. And marathon started, and Nike started putting out running shoes. And a world where nobody ran marathons has grown into a world where, go ahead and try to get into the New York Marathon. You won't get in. I mean, it is so competitive to be one of the 50,000 people in the New York Marathon now. So it's a, we've been brainwashed, and people are all, I mean, we are so susceptible to buying into stuff. Just look at all the political crap in the world. We are so susceptible to buying in, and people have bought into long, slow running. And if I had it all to do over again, or if I could advise some young guy, I would say sprint 2 or 3 times a week. Your workout's 25 minutes. You're going to do about 1 minute of work in that 25 minutes. But if you never slow down, you'll never grow old. And you will, it will be a joyful pursuit for you. And there are, I have remote trained several masters athletes. They're very good ones. And many of them are running lifelong best times in their 40s and 50s because in their 20s and 30s, they were hurt all the time because they're doing too much. And so, no, I totally believe that it, whether you're 10 years old or 60, sprinting is the most important part of athleticism and should be done.
And you know, you think, and I heard from podcasts, so this is kind of where this whole like train process went through was like when you are young, like 6, 7 years old, like you don't even think about sprinting, you just go, like you just go, it's just natural. And then when you get into like organized sports, and especially like football, like you have someone telling you what to do all the time. For at least, you know, from middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, all the way to high school. And then afterwards, we kind of just lose it. Like, you just stop. I don't know. It's because of like the wear and tear. I don't know. It's because like someone, like you were talking about, like being injured into their 20s and 30s. You know, I don't know if it's like not, again, not having someone like above you saying you must be doing this. But I think we need to like turn around in that aspect of like, yes, I think slow jogging could be good and beneficial for some people and on an aerobic base, you know, general fitness. But also, you know, sprinting cannot be ignored either.
I agree. And I really like the idea that, okay, getting back to the reason why you said that I think a lot of people don't do it. I think that running fast was always with little or no recovery. And so we never felt the joyful sprinting. And I think my guys know joyful sprinting because they, we don't let anybody run a 10-yard fly unless they've had 5 minutes of rest. I mean, you feel fine after 2 minutes, but all the ATPs haven't flooded back into your muscles. And so you really need to have full recovery. And so we're kind of laying around like cats waiting to run again. And then we go. And what we found is that it's joyful. And if we time, which I don't, I don't think you're really sprinting unless you're timing. Timing is really important. I don't know how I've been coaching with free lap for over 10 years. I don't know how you would coach without a timing system, and free lap is weatherproof and the best thing I've ever found. And then you record, rank, and publish because you create internal competition, like, oh my goodness, I'm so much faster than I was 6 months ago. And then you also gamify practice in terms of being competitive with each other. And when we yell out a time, everybody hears it and everybody's like, gosh, I can't believe he just ran that. I'm going to beat that. just like if we were playing, a game on TV or something, or on a computer. When we keep score, we seem to care more. And too many like old school track practices, we'd never kept score.
And I kind of want to touch on that, like record, rank, publish, because that and again the timing system of like timing sprints and everything like that has been a game changer for my training the last 2 or 3 years. We were blessed at Bolivar, which we kind of talked about that school a little bit before recording. We were blessed enough to have a Dasher system there, and now I get to this new school. I have another Dasher system there. And we had two guys for our 30 into 10, our 10-yard fly with a 30 build, had two guys hit below a second. Like, I think it was 0.98, and we had a 0.97. And then we get to have our conversions. I think that 0.97 turns into like, I have stop signs. I made custom stop signs for our kids. Like, the 20, I think that's 21 miles an hour for that 0.97, and it's got a crown on it. And that kid, I showed him, like, look, you get to have this tomorrow, which I'm going to print it out after we get done here. But, like, that's intent that we want for our athletes. And I mean, after they run their really long, it's basically 40 yards. I mean, I tell them, like, don't jog back, walk. Like, put your hands on your head, on your hips, something like that. Just walk, like, rest. And I mean, after, like, I think we go 30 kids at a time because football team, I think we got like 30, or I'm sorry, 65, 70 athletes. Like, after we get done, 35 kids, it's probably solid 3, 4 minutes after one long sprint. Like, you got plenty of full time, take your time, do what you need to do, whatever. But I just see it for myself as a coach of that record, rank, publish, timing systems, timing your sprints. Look where you were 6 months ago. You were running a 105 on the average. You were running, 107. Now you PR'd at this time. I mean, it's completely awesome to see that for our athletes.
And I think coaches have always kind of internalized the idea that we're motivators. And motivation is about saying the right things at the right times to kids. And it's really not. Motivation is when the kid sees progress, when the kid feels successful. If you've ever worked on something for 6 weeks and not got better at it, that was probably a long time ago because you quit. I mean, and so since speed kind of grows slow, speed grows like a tree, we really need to time and record, rank, and publish and keep good records and show progress. And then the motivation starts happening. And once an athlete gets motivated, they want to build their own house. We don't have to, like scream at them to become a better athlete. They start asking us, what could I be doing in addition to this? And they never like my answer. It's always sleep more. They look at me like, gosh, you've been talking to my mom or what? Like, no, I sleeping more is the lowest hanging fruit for a sprinter or for an athlete. And it's the hardest thing a high school kid will ever do.
Absolutely. I saw a tweet about a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, I can't remember, that the I guess the key factor now in strength conditioning, sport performance in the high school realm is sleep and it's nutrition. If you can get those, everyone lives now and it seems like everyone sprints now. I mean, if you can get your sleep and you can get a kid, a high school kid to have proper nutrition, you are way ahead of the game that most high school kids are doing right now.
And just think about what we're teaching them in life itself is that we started, especially our cross country team that's 13th in the nation this year. They talk about championship sleep, and that's 9 to 9.5 hours a night. And one of the kids in the first group that did it, I mean, he was a really good, he's running the University of Florida now. And I said, so you're really getting over 9 hours of sleep every night? And Ryan said, yeah, I am. I said, what have you noticed most of all? He goes, well, I can my capacity to work is a lot more. You know, like I'm able to work more. He said, but the biggest thing is I'm awake all day during class. Think about that. And one of the things with the Feed the Cats speed training is that we don't train speed if we're depressed, sore, sick, or tired. And people say, well, what happens if kids all come in, they're sore and tired and depressed? And well, we'll call off practice. And they're like, well, won't the kids start just saying that to get out of practice? I'm like, wait, wait, you don't understand. My kids want to practice. Practice is the best part of their day. And so if we start teaching a kid, like the people I remote train, I say, yeah, you need to speed train 2 or 3 times a week, but you got to be fresh. And they say, well, with the way my coaches are, I'm pretty much never fresh. I said, okay, then you'll never speed train. You'll be slow forever. And they'll go, oh, but no, I want to. No, you got to find some way of training fresh. It may be on Saturday morning when you have to go lift Saturday afternoon, or, but you got to train fresh. And you know, like your batteries are charged, and even if you haven't had any coffee, you feel caffeinated. And if we could get kids to want to be like that every day, man, you know, all of a sudden we have a productive, happy kid or human or, you know, adult. And I just think that we've lived in this work, work, work society so much where people work 50-hour weeks. And if they lose, it's because they didn't work hard enough, that the winners always outwork the losers. And it's all BS. It's mythology. You know, I think losers usually outwork the winners, to tell you the truth. And so, if it's just hard to, like I say, we've been brainwashed that it's almost like we don't want to be fresh and energetic and rested. We it's almost like we want to have a lack of sleep, and that's just backwards.
I also think about, like, if we do speed training and someone's like giving them the minimal rest, it's like you're not really speed training at that point, you're conditioning. And I mean, to each their own, you know, you coach the way that you believe that you, but don't, you know, slap on the label saying that you're speed training when you're giving the kid like 30 second rest and they just went, you know, down and back, they had to jog back and now they have to go again. Like, don't slap that speed label on something that you're calling speed, but it's conditioning.
I think you're right, and I've had to do a lot of work with that. And anytime I'm hyperbolic, I'm opinionated, and you know, you don't really move the needle much if you're wishy-washy like most coaches are. Like, well, it depends on the individual, and blah blah blah. And like, I'm reminded of there's a great SSC guy at West Point, and he posted on the whistle, guys were running up a ramp. Sprinting up a ramp, sprinting up a ramp. They, you know, like hurry down, sprint up again, sprint up again. And they're like big guys, are like football players. And he goes, getting our sprint work in. And I knew this guy was like one of the most respected guys in the country. But I just said, I just quote tweeted it and said, this isn't sprint work. And oh my goodness. I mean, people just attacked me. Like, how can you attack a legend? And I said, I'm not attacking. I'm quarreling. I just don't think you say that repeat sprint work in a state of fatigue is sprint work. It is conditioning. I'm not saying it does not have value, but no one is getting faster. And we need to delineate between stuff that is hard and repetitive and maybe even necessary, and stuff that builds you as a faster athlete.
It just depends on the goal that you want for your session and what the outcome that you want. You know, there are times, and especially I played football, I wrestled up in Illinois, so there are times that you're going to have to do like athletic things under fatigue, and you know, there's always a time and place for things like that. I just when you say speed training, I think maximum intent, but with minimum, or I'm sorry, yes, maximum intent, maximum rest, not minimum rest, maximum, or yeah, maximum rest.
I agree. And you're exactly right. Like, I just got back from practice and we did what we call a lactate workout. We may not run more than 200 meters in practice, but one of our favorite workouts is a 4x4 predictor, where we will run three 200s with 4 minutes rest. And that's not complete rest. And we are spiked up, and we are timing with free lap. And we will add the three times together, take two-thirds of that time, add 2 seconds, and that's our predicted 4x4 time. And we record, rank, and publish. Okay, now if you watched it, you would be very impressed. You'd be like, oh man, those guys are fast. We are fast because we're ranked number two in the state of Illinois in the 4x4. I mean, we are fast, but that's not sprint work. We are working on sprinting far and sprinting as fast as we can while we are hurting. Now, as you said, that is necessary, but it's just, and people say, oh, it's just semantics. No, it's not. If I thought we were getting faster by doing that, that would lead to problems because you can't do that every day. Matter of fact, I don't think you can do it more than once a week. And we did a speed day 2 days ago where we did three 10-meter flies, full run in. Now that's a speed day. 5 minutes rest, total recovery, we're timing. We got five guys this year who have hit 23 miles an hour. And those guys do not hit it every day. I mean, they hit it like once out of every five speed workouts or so. Because 23 is really fast. But that's a speed day. Those are days that we are teaching the body to run faster. And there's a huge difference between a lactate day where we're trying to learn how to run far, and a speed day where we're trying to see how fast our Porsche can go.
Absolutely. And I want to peel it back to that workout you told, the three sets of 200 meters. And I'll be honest with you, coach. I was one of those, I was like, that don't seem that bad. So, being the one I am, I go out to a track. I say, all right, let's see how this rolls. 4 minute rest, everything like that. Just walked it back, whatever. By that third one, I was dead. I think that was the moment I became a feed the cats believer. It was because I was like, I'm hurting right now. My hamstrings hurt. I'm tired, and whatnot. And I think that's the moment I realized, like, what have I been doing as a coach, and what is happening to my athletes, from just like what I've done before. And you kind of mentioned it earlier of like, you look at, your past programs, you look at your past coaching, and like, you kind of cringe a little bit. And that was kind of like my speed training and I guess glorified conditioning, if you want to call it that. It was to like, what was I doing with my kids? What were my kids feeling like? I just, I that was the moment I think I was a feed the cats believer.
I ran middle school, high school, and college track, and it's hilarious. I was a sprinter, like 100 to 400, and I was never timed in a short sprint ever in practice. It blows my mind. All we did was run, and we ran a lot, and we never ran race pace ever, 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 ever. And so, if you ask me, was running 10 300s hard? I go, yeah, it like turned me into a zombie. It is mentally one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. But it didn't hurt like the 4x4 predictor. Like early in the year, when we do predictors, when we do lactate work, my guys are literally in a fetal position afterwards. Usually one of them is throwing up because they're so acidic that their brain is saying, holy crap, we might die here if we don't purge some hydrochloric from our stomach. And so we purge that hydrochloric. And it's not because you ate the wrong thing at lunch. It's because you're just really acidic. You're not sick, you're acidic. And I really don't, when people visit and see us do one of these workouts, I think they understand that there must be a pain associated with this that's unlike anything they've ever done. Even if they've had 4 hour practices before, there's something so intense about getting real acidic. I don't think I've been acidic for the last 40 years and I don't want to be. I don't want, I mean, but if I was training for the what age group, it'd be the 65 to 69 400 meters, I would have to do some acid tolerance training, some lactate training. And it's not the volume that kills you, it's the intensity.
I think that's what gets a lot of people. It's, and I think about weight room terms as well. Like a lot of lactate builds up of like really heavy intensity in the weight room, right? If you have not squatted 315 for let's say a year, you go squat for 315, your legs are going to feel a lot heavier. That's lactate. It's kind of the same idea, but with sprinting, you know, when you do maximum intensity for let's just say a 200 sprint, that's a pretty good distance and pretty good intensity under that distance as well. And then, yes, you start to accumulate lactate and then you start to feel tired, you start to feel heavy. And sometimes the body just says, get this stuff out, man. I mean, like, it's science.
And the I think it's important for people to listen. You know, like I was a chemistry teacher, so I love geeking out with this stuff. But the lactate is not okay. First of all, everybody talks about lactic acid. Even my coach in high school 50 years ago talked about lactic acid, and lactic acid is here for like a second and turns into lactate, just transforms immediately. And then what happens though, it's lactate plus a hydrogen ion, is those hydrogen ions that cause all the problems. It causes you to, the acidity causes you the problem. It's what makes you nauseous. If the acidity gets too high, glycolysis shuts down and you literally can't, you're done. You know, you're just can't move anymore. You don't want glycolytic shutdown. So lactate gets a lot of press, you know, but lactate is nothing more than the measurable of intensity. It is the acidity that is the demon, you know, the blurry eyed, the staggering walk. And I mean, it is, yeah, when you become really acidic, it is unlike anything that will ever, this is a good thing. People that win marathons have the lactate levels of somebody at rest. Think about that. Does that mean a marathon's easy to run in 2 hours? No, a fast marathon is incredibly hard, but it's incredibly hard in a totally aerobic way. You are not even lactate threshold. You are aerobic. Now you have an aerobic engine like nobody else, where you're able to run a 450 mile 26 times without stopping, or like this too, a 72 second 400, 100 and something times without stopping. Yeah, I mean, if I tried to do that, I'd be all acidic because my aerobic engine isn't that good. But these guys have developed such an aerobic engine. So my point being is that marathons are hard and 3 times 200 is hard, but they're totally different energy systems.
I think that's a great point that you point out there, the energy systems. And I think we kind of shifted a little bit in the high school training of like understanding that the phosgene system is a lot different than our oxidative systems. And fast glycolysis is a little bit different than just regular, you know, glycolysis of what happens in the body. I think we're a lot more educated. I mean, due to social media and the internet, I mean, there's so much material out there that it's almost not an excuse to say, well, I just didn't know. This is we always done that way, which I think is a total BS excuse of like, yeah, we done said program for, you know, 20 years. It's like, yeah, but science says that you're training in the oxidative when your sport is in the phosgene, right? You know, you're going one, just take football, for example. Football plays what, 3, 4, or 5 seconds? And you're training past a minute, 2 minutes of training of like, just no, it doesn't make
No
sense.
need, no need. It's hard. It's hard. And a lot of football coaches fall in love with hard. I mean, I think there's some psychosexual type thing going on with wanting everything to be hard, but it is a sport where you need to be at top speed, top intensity, 60 times a night in a 3 hour period. It's crazy. And another thing that I think is so valuable, and I love the fact that you brought in social media because it gets such a bad rap. And I mean, I'm in love with Twitter. I mean, oh yeah, I blocked a guy a couple of days ago. I mean, anybody that gets personal or, is stupid or something, I just block them because life's too short. You want to surround yourself with friends. But I have learned so much, and there's so much out there. Without Twitter, I would have never met Brian Kula. There was an article published online. I think it was Stack. There's an online magazine called Stack, and I swear to God, over 20 people sent me the article. It's how Christian McCaffrey trains like a track athlete. And he was being trained by this guy named Brian Kula, who was his former track coach. And everybody's like, hey, Brian Kula feeds the cats. I mean, everything was exactly like no conditioning at all summer, zero, all phosphagen system, which to those people, I'm not trying to lose you or anything here. Basically, he does things really fast for 5 seconds, recovers, repeats. And he stacks those anaerobic, not aerobic, anaerobic exercises, one on top of another, maybe 50 to 60 of them in a 2 hour period or an hour period or something like that with full rest. And he's in better shape than anybody in the NFL without doing any laps, any mileage, any long shuttles, any conditioning tests every Friday, all those things. But the funny part of the story is that I'd heard enough, and finally somehow I got Brian Kula's number, and I said, "Hey, Brian, this is Tony Holler." He goes, "Okay," and I said, "Like, feed the cats, man." He goes, "What are you talking about?" He had never heard of me ever. We had both evolved into believing the same things on different islands, and we've been like best friends ever since. And it's just such a beautiful thing to see. I'm sure you've seen the video clips. There's a couple of them on my YouTube channel that Brian has sent me of Christian training, and he's doing all kinds of crazy things, and he's doing them at high intensity, high speeds. But I tell people when I show them it, I say, "You're not seeing something. You're not seeing the recoveries. You're just seeing the action. You're seeing like 5 seconds, 5 seconds, 5 seconds, 5 seconds. You're not seeing the 2 minutes in between. Because if he was not taking a couple minutes in between, he couldn't do the next one at top speed." So yeah, there's just so much we can learn out there. And some of it's science. I hate to say it, I taught science for 38 years, but I'm not really very sciencey in my training. I'm much more anecdotal. I want to hear stories. I want to hear how Christian is trained. I want to hear how Chris Corfus trains David Montgomery for the Lions. And by the way, David, my friend Chris, he was just up in Detroit a couple weeks ago, and he wrote their entire speed program, and it was beautiful. You'll like this. The S&C guy up there, a guy that had been in the NFL for 30 some years, say, "We've been doing the same, basically the same stuff with the same intent for about 30 years, and we're not making anybody better." Wow. I mean, that's a great admission, isn't it? We're not making anybody better. And so here they're bringing in this history teacher from Hinsdale High School to rewrite their speed stuff. They bought all these 1080 sprints and all that stuff. And I guarantee it's not traditional conditioning. It is stuff that McCaffrey does. It's fast, it's speed, it's small doses. It is movement. If you think about it, almost every sport is movement. And if I love the saying, if you train the extreme, you train the range. So if you train your car to go 23 miles an hour, your car is really good at 18 and 19 and 20. But if your car can only go 19 miles an hour, whoo, those game speeds will kill you. And so I love that. Train the extreme, you train the range. And so running fast is something so many S&C people, especially with the high revenue sports, the million dollar athletes, million dollar programs, They're so scared of somebody pulling a hamstring. A lot of teams don't sprint.
And I think that's the missing key there, that they don't sprint it, because sprinting is a hamstring vaccine. I mean, how do you know that you can reach top speed if you never train it? And then how do you know that you can't beat that old time, or beat, how can you know that you can't raise your own ceiling? I use that analogy all the time, whether it's weight room or sprinting. It's like, let's raise your ceiling and raise your floor. If you can normally go at 18 miles an hour for your floor and normally go at 22, why not raise it? Why not try to go up? And I kind of want to change gears. I know this is random, and that's how my
You're
mind works.
good.
I go all over the place. I think about social media, and I think about, like, I saw what you posted about TrustStick, your conversions, everything like that. I sent her a head track coach. I got your sheet actually ingrained into my sheet as well, so now it does all the conversions and whatnot. It's awesome. So what do you use the truck stick for anyone that wants to use that? Because I got a couple questions about that, and I understand it in my mind, but I want to hear from you.
Okay, I don't use truck stick myself because I'm a track coach. Now, if I was a throws coach, I think I would. I have a great throws coach that deals with my throwers. But basically, it is the idea that in sports where size matters, like football, hell, I would say even basketball, like if you're a big, strong kid, that's good. So size does matter. I don't think size matters in baseball, so maybe not. So the point is this, is that if you're a football coach and you're running an off-season program, first of all, don't spend all summer doing conditioning. You have no time to waste. You need to train speed from day one to day end. Speed, explosiveness, staying as fresh as you can, maybe cut down practices to 90 minutes or 2 hours, maybe only 4 days a week, maybe 3 days a week. Anytime you cut down practice, quality automatically improves, and quality wins games, not quantity. And so what truck stick will do, sure, you will go ahead and reward your fastest guys in your rankings. You'll have speed bands, like wristbands, for like 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 miles an hour, hand those out. That's great. You want fast athletes for sure. But maybe more important than the fastest athletes, because as you know, you can be a 24 mile an hour guy, and if you can't catch, you can't play wide receiver. So speed is everybody improves by getting faster, but speed is not does not punch your ticket to be a great player. You got to do a lot of other things. And I get criticized for that a lot, and people don't know what they're talking about. But if you are big and fast, your ticket is punched. There are no false positives. If you are big and fast, you will find a place in the offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, tight end, somewhere. And you are going to be a star. Now, if you're big and slow, you might play some D3 ball someday, but if you're big and slow, you ain't gonna make it. You gotta be a big athlete. You gotta be a big cat, is what I call them. So what we do is we weigh a kid and see how fast they can run. It's pretty simple. The only difference between speed and truck stick is that we're gonna add in weight, and the mathematics is speed in kilograms times speed in meters per second. And people, their minds blown now, like, well, wait. I thought, okay. So in my spreadsheet that anybody can have, if they just email me, text me, whatever, we could even put it in your show notes if you want. And all you have to do is go copy and then start filling in the names. And so then all you have to do is weigh the kid in pounds. My spreadsheet will change it to kilograms for you. Super simple. I'm a science guy. And then you do that unlimited run in, usually 30 yards into a 10. For people that don't understand what a fly is, it's basically instead of timing the 40, you time the last 10 of a 40. And then my spreadsheet will change that time to miles per hour, which is cool. That's our bands. And then it will change miles per hour to meters per second. And you don't have to do it. You don't have any calculator or anything. I already have the formulas in there. So then the final column is kilograms times meters per second, and you get a number in the hundreds. And so my good friend, Garrett Mueller at Stuartville, who started the truck stick, it's really, he didn't really start it. He stole it from physics. It's momentum is all it is. It's mass times speed. That's all it is. And so what he found, Stuartville High School is a school of, I think, 600. So, you know, it's like a middle-sized school in Minnesota, but they went 14-0 this year, and just, they look like they could beat anybody in the country. And they were huge on the truck stick. What he has found is that if you are a truck stick of 700, it's going to be hard to keep you off the field. If you're a truck stick over 800, you're going to help us win games. And if you're 900, people are going to notice you. You're going to be all conference, all state. You're going to, you know, college recruiters, blah, blah, blah. And so what he's done with that is he has the wristbands for pure speed and dog tags for truck stick. 700, 800, 900. And one of the things that I enjoy doing is looking at the guys in the NFL draft. Like 5 years ago, well, the best offensive tackle in the NFL this past year was Tristan Wirfs, a guy from Iowa who won the state throws in Iowa, I think, five times, shot and discus. Amazing. I think he's three-time state champ as a heavyweight wrestler. And then he played offensive tackle. And so Tristan ran 4.85 in the 40 at a weight of 325. He's 6'5". And so I've crunched numbers, and if you can run 485, you have to be able to run over 20 miles an hour. You can't break five without being able to run 20 miles an hour. So I think I estimated his meters per se- or his top speed at being 20.4, changed it into meters per second, blah, blah, blah. Tristan Wirfs has a truck stick of 1325. Now, remember, 900 is a high school star. Well, if you are the best offensive tackle in the NFL, you're big and fast, and your truck stick is really huge. And so that's why guys that weigh 200 pounds can't play offensive tackle. They don't have enough momentum. Oh, they can be fast at 200, but you can't move anybody. So I love the truck stick. I think that the truck stick gives us an opportunity to speed train the bigs and let them know that if they're big, that's good. But if they're big and fast, that's great. And so I just think it's win, win, win.
And we always heard that bigger, faster, stronger mentality. You know, mm-hmm. I think it got adopted into the 90s. And it's like, yes, bigger, faster, stronger, more athletic. I think there's one more component to it. Because you can be big, you can be fast, you can be strong. But if you're not athletic, if you can't tie those three things together, it's almost like worthless. And to have someone like that tackle from Iowa, you know, being a heavyweight wrestler, three-time heavyweight wrestler, like state champion, you got to be pretty damn athletic to be a state champion wrestler.
Well, and you're an old throws coach. You understand that there are some big, strong dudes that throw 30 feet. And that if you can throw 30 feet, that's not very good. But the guys that can throw 60 can put their entire body into the throw. That's pretty important for an offensive tackle or a defensive tackle or a middle linebacker. Let's just say that there's not many 60-foot throwers that would not be stars in college football.
It makes sense. It absolutely makes sense because they can use their body to their advantage and the athleticism that they were just God-given with.
Yeah. Or yeah. And this is important too. So many people dismiss speed and athleticism as genetics. And they're 100% right, except for dismissing it. They shouldn't dismiss it. But everything is genetics. If you have two really smart parents that, you know, have PhDs, their kids are probably going to be really smart. If you have two parents that are distance runners, that kid is probably going to have a great aerobic engine. No matter, I mean, he has advantages. Speed, strength, all, I mean, like, strength is genetic too. But none of us say, oh, strength is just genetic, weightlifting doesn't matter. None of us would ever say that. But the same people who believe in the weights will say speed is just genetic, and they don't work on it. You know, and and you talk about more to it than just big and fast. Those are, I think, the two big boulders. But when I say the four things of being an apex predator is lift heavy, in other words, real strong, sprint fast, jump high, jump far, two different things. We'll say jump, and then bounce. I think bounce is kind of underrated. It's like reaction force, the ability to hit the ground and move quickly the other direction. A lot of people call it agility. I call it bounce. But if we can, we need to stop training the bigs just in the weight room and then going out and run them till they hate it. We need to start getting them jumping and bouncing and sprinting, and we need to turn them into big cats, big athletes.
Like kind of how we talked about before we were recording, you know, we train athletes. We're taking away that sport aspect of it. You know, we're trained athletes. They should be able to move really, really well. They should be able to squat really well. They should be able to jump really high. They should be able to jump really far. You know, that's a horizontal, and that's a vertical power output, two different measurements, like you said. But yes, they like offensive linemen, yeah, our bigs, they should be really, really strong. That's part of the game, you know, that's part of why they play football. That's probably some reason why they play offense or defensive line. It's because, yes, they are really, really strong. But they're athletes. You know, they're not offensive or defensive linemen. They are athletes.
The best ones are. For sure they are. I totally agree with that. I think that that with all that stuff, you know, you get what you do. You know, we are what we do. And when you're talking about, you know, I love pyramids. The base of my pyramid is kind of unique. The base of my pyramid is rest, recovery, sleep, hydration, nutrition. Because I don't think you can be a great athlete with the opposite. You know, so that's the base. And then the next thing is that apex predator stuff. Lift heavy, sprint fast, jump high, jump far, bounce. And those things have nothing to do specifically with any one sport. And then the next part is like the Tony Villani stuff. It's the agility and the change of directions and more like trying to replicate the movements of that sport. And then the next layer is the sport itself. And it's really scary. I just had this thought. It's really scary that, you know, like these kids that play travel baseball and they're staying in Hampton Inns all over the country every weekend, and their parents are spending $20,000 a year and traveling the country for their 8-year-old that's wearing a $100 uniform. They're not getting any of the base stuff. They're not getting the lowest level, the next level, the next level. I mean, they're sport specific at 8 years old. That's all they're doing. And that's where, at least back in the olden days, there was a great basketball player. He actually is a commentator on TV now, a guy named Bardo, Stephen Bardo. He played for the University of Illinois, played like 10 years in NBA. And I coached against Stephen when he was at Carbondale. I was at Harrisburg. And Stephen was 6'6 and had like 7-foot arms. And he was going to go to the University of Illinois. I mean, he's going to be great. Play for the Flying the Lion Eye back in the day. And he's still in the game today, like I said. But Lou Henson, I'll never forget this. Lou Henson said, what are you doing in the spring? He goes, oh, coach, I just play basketball. He goes, go out for track. Stephen Bartow went out for track his senior year after signing for the University of Illinois and ran some 50 low 400s, you know, like 50.1, 50.2. Of course, he was a star, but that's the way coaches used to think, is that you need to get out and sprint. You need to do some athletic things. Don't just shoot the ball 12 months a year. But that's kind of the world that we're living in. And parents have their mind brainwashed by these people trying to suck the money out of them, that what they need to do is travel teams and personal trainers and all that stuff. And they're not playing multiple sports. And they're not being around people like you and me who are trying to create athleticism. And so they're really getting shortchanged.
I also think, too, that a lot of parents think about, like, the future for their kid. I mean, I get it. I mean, I really do. You know, you want the best for your child, everything like that. And it's like, well, I want them to get recruited. I want them to go on to college. I want them to, you know, get the big awards and stuff like that. And I'm sitting there thinking, it's like, your kid is like 7 and playing travel baseball. Like, they're not going, like, the University of Iowa or the Illini or the University of Tennessee is not going to sign a 7-year-old a scholarship. I mean, again, we live in the world that we live in. Stranger things could happen. Now, I could be totally wrong, but I'll bet money. I'll bet my bank account right now that, you know, a recruit from the University of Tennessee is not going to recruit a 7-year-old, you know, to go play for them at that point in their life. I understand exposure. I understand, you know, maybe you love the game that much. And then we start talking about burnout and stuff like that. But I think about, if you really want best for your kid, right, bring them someone that can train them properly, understand movements, understand the physiological adaptations that they have to go through in order to do their sport. And like, yes, I understand that people, like, you know, you may like to play baseball, and that's great. I'm glad I'm a huge component for organized sports. I think it develops a lot of good characteristics and a lot of good habits for our youth. But understand that, like, little 7-year-old Jimmy just wants to go play baseball. He's not thinking about, you know, going to play college baseball. And, you know, maybe some kids might say, you know, that's cool, but he's worried about, you know, probably eating Sonic afterwards. You know, he's not worried about the future. I think that's where parents' minds kind of go to when we talk about, like, travel baseball and stuff like that. And it's easy for us as coaches to be like, well, why don't you just come into the weight room or come, you know, sprint or whatever, train. And they're thinking, we got to get more exposure out. We got to get more exposure out. We got to do this. You know, I don't want to be behind the curve.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we have a really good track team. I think most of the weeks this year, we've been ranked in the top 10 in Illinois. We're indoor conference champs, the best conference in Illinois. You know, we're good. And we have some really good kids that try to do two sports at once. We have kids that, I mean, they go to, like, Florida and Arizona to play weekend 7-on-7 tournaments. And they come back and they can hardly practice the next week because they played like 8 games. They have a sore foot and a sore knee. And I'm like, yeah, when everyone else was recovering from Thursday's meet, you guys were beating yourself to death, and now you don't get to train and get faster. How's that helping you? And I say, no, you're a good receiver, right? Yes, coach, I'm a good receiver. You run good routes? I run the best routes. You got good hands? I got the best hands. I go, yeah, but you run 21 miles an hour. You know where a guy that runs 21 miles an hour is going to play? He's going to play D3. I don't care how good you are at catching the ball and running routes. If you are a 21 mile an hour guy and your vertical's 30 inches instead of 36, and your standing long jump is 80 inches instead of 100, you're not going to play D1. Now, if you have those great hands and run great routes and we can get you to 23 miles an hour, you play on TV. That's the difference. And I think it sinks into them, but I'm not talking to the parents. And as you know, the parents call the shots. And somebody has told the parents that if you want to get recruited, if you want to play big time, you need to join the elite 7-on-7, blah blah blah, and we'll travel all over the country, and your kid will be getting offers next year. But that's the world we live in.
Absolutely. And you can't help but to think, you can do so much better for that kid. Just come in, sprint, train, recover, like properly, do things properly. In our eyes, we're seeing, little Jamie go play seven baseball games between Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Tuesday he's trashed. I mean, actually just trashed. Like, coach, I can't practice or I can't lift today. That's a common thing I hear. No, I can't lift today. My legs hurts. And it's like, what did you do between Saturday and Monday? It's like, I play game and we went to Arizona and back and we drove, half across the country, whatever. It's like, I bet you are tired.
And I bet he's not real good in the classroom either. That has to be hard on kids. And you know what's really sad? I think it's hard on families too. I think families, they may get caught up, really enjoying that, hotel pool, that indoor pool up in wherever. But there's better things. And I hate to be the old codger that said that, that like, for me, it was kind of like football was in the fall, and then basketball was in the winter, and then track was in the spring, and then I played baseball in the, and even though I wasn't training with a professional like you, I was playing four sports that required some different types of skills and movements, eye-hand coordination, and I think that's a great way to grow up with a lot of different activities. And then when you get into your teens, 14, 15, 16, I think there's a place to become a better athlete outside of your sport. And especially if the guy that's working with you is not burning the stake. I don't like kids going from my practice to somebody and they're going to work them harder than I do. I don't want that. But if they're going to somebody and they understand how important tomorrow is, and they're going to tweak a few things and work on some things that maybe they're not getting in a normal practice, I totally endorse that.
I totally agree, and I love where you're talking about like adapting to other skill sets from other sports. When I wrestled in Illinois, I learned a lot of skill sets that I did not get in football. I mean, I played offensive line, I long snapped, whatever. But when I went to wrestling, there were some things I just, you learn about leverage, you learn how to move your hips, you learn grabbing, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about yourself in wrestling. And
And you
I'm a
compete, and you compete. I hate these kids, or not hate them. I tell football players, you can't play nine football games a year, compete nine times, and be a competitor. You need to wrestle, you need to play basketball, you need to throw, you need to. Yeah, competition is something that's so important, and I think that every sport, like wrestling, is very solo. And that's good for a kid. In track, I think kids are, even though there's no not many fans in the stands or anything, I think it's probably the most anxiety-ridden thing in the world to stand on the starting line, and you feel like everybody's watching you, and you're full of doubt, and you're going to compete. And probably the worst guys are the throwers. I don't know if you've ever experienced this. But I wish I had a dime for every time a thrower would come over and say, "Coach, I was throwing 52 in warm-ups." I'm like, "How far did you throw in for real?" He said, "Well, only 45." Well, that's because you were loose and feeling good. And then when you thought the spotlight was on you, you choked. So hopefully kids figure that stuff out. It makes them better.
Natural just competition, it does wonders for a human, but also get that anxiety part of like competing and being on, I guess, on that center stage. For wrestling, it didn't matter to me as much, probably because I hated wrestling, right? I didn't like it. I'll throw it out there. I appreciate it more now than I did when I was actually wrestling. Football was the same way, but I really enjoyed football. I did it for 13 years. You kind of get you You tune out the crowds, you tune out a lot of things over time. Track was one of those I couldn't tune out. You go, behind the ring, you got all these guys that are sometimes bigger than you, and they're going to throw further than you. And when I was a senior, I wasn't very good. I'll be honest with you. I threw for 4 years. I got a little bit better. I think I threw like 32, 35 at best. I mean, I was like 190-pound, 200-pound dude. But I mean, there were some sophomores behind us that threw 35, 36, 37 on a consistent basis. And I was wondering in the back of my mind, or like worry is like, are they going to take my spot? Are they, and you start to have that anxiety, that kind of psychological, not torture, but that doubt, that worrying with you.
It's good for us. I mean, I feel sorry for kids. There's not enough kids that play sports anymore. I mean, way back in the day, when girls did not play sports, like I can actually remember when girls didn't have girl sports, and the boys that didn't make the basketball team would play intramural basketball. But once girls' sports started, it's only the interscholastic teams that got the gym. So those 10 intramural boys teams, there's no such thing anymore. So if you're not good enough to make a basketball team, wrestling team, track team, whatever, you're just one of those kids, that has never, probably is not very good at anxiety, not very good at fighting through things and dealing with crap, And so I love everything about sports and what we can teach kids and what the sport itself would teach kids. Even if they don't have a great coach, the sport will teach you some things.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and start wrapping some things up here, Coach. I always do this at the end of our episodes here. It's called Conjugate Coach Spotlight. So is there any coach that you want to highlight, shout out?
Outside of my dad, who passed away in January, he would be the first guy because, in many ways, he was my best friend for 65 years. But beyond that, strangely, I grew up, this is kind of embarrassing, but worshiping Bobby Knight. And most people know Bob Knight from the time when he started to get crazy. I knew Bob Knight, in the 70s and 80s, and I sat in on his classes. I actually went to Bob Knight's coaching academy, 4 days of taking notes for about 8 hours a day. And he was the greatest teacher I've ever heard. I still remember things he used to say, things like this, you'll like this. He says, "You don't form habits by talking about them." And like I heard this 40 years ago and wrote it down, and I'm still repeating it. So he was just somebody that could own a room, and without any Starbucks coffee, I never nodded off in like 8 hours of taking notes. And I think he taught me how to be a teacher. It's just I love people that can communicate ideas and keep you interested.
I think that those are the best coaches, are the ones that are the best teachers. Being a teacher myself, I teach biology, in case you never know.
Oh, total respect. Well, not as much respect as if you taught physics or chemistry, but biology is a close, you're a runner up to those math sciences.
You'll like this. When I was studying for the CSCS, that certified strength conditioning, specialist exam. The year that I passed it, I was teaching, this is my first year teaching biology. There's a scientific portion to that. Well, I learned all the scientific portion just by teaching my class of like what is glycolysis, what's the exercise science, and you'll like that. But like the best teachers or the best coaches are the best teachers. Like you being able to deliver instruction and make it clear and concise and for it to stick with like kids
Connect.
is this huge.
I love the word connect because I've known especially chemistry teachers who were so much smarter than me, brilliant, and they were terrible. terrible teachers because they knowing something and connecting with a 15-year-old is two different things. And you know, I think sometimes that great teachers just have a gift. I think charisma, charisma actually means God's gift. Charisma can be a gift. And gosh, coaches, even bad coaches, were full of charisma. They could take like dumb training and make it win. And it's fascinating to talk about.
Absolutely, Coach. Well, I want to thank you for your time, man. I want to thank you for being on here and saying yes to a complete stranger on social media, and you know, just delivering everything about Feed the Cats to coaching, just everything, man. It's completely awesome, and it was just great, just connected with you, Coach Holler. It's been completely awesome.
Well, I appreciate you, and you know, I like those guys down in Tennessee, as we were talking about before. I moved to Tennessee after 23 years of coaching coaching in Franklin for 2 years, and I felt like an alien for 2 years. And Franklin was like half Northerners, you know, like it was like the coolest place in the world. But man, teachers just don't make a whole lot of money in Tennessee, so you need to move up here and double your salary someday.
You know, I always thought about that thought of like, if I move back to Baltimore, you know, I think a lot of the teachers, I'm pretty sure 90% of my coaching staff that for football is still there, because it is a really good school, and I think that's one of the reasons why my folks wanted to move to that part of Illinois was because of the school system there. But you know, you never know. Life happens, man.
That's right. That's right. It's great talking to you, John Mark. I appreciate you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Coach Holler. And that's another episode of the Conjugate Chats. Please stay strong and have a day today.